Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Hey loves, welcome back. I am so excited for today's episode, How the Success Trap Keeps High Achievers Miserably Single. So I am honored to have Dr. Amina Aitse-Selmi. Have I pronounced that right first?
You have indeed.
Yes. Okay. So Dr. Amina is an independent leadership and career coach to leaders working on global challenges. Prior to that, she was an academic clinician working for the UK government on global policy, including the United Nations Disaster Risk Reduction and Sustainable Development Frameworks. She's the author of the award-winning book, The Success Trap, Why Good People Stay in Jobs They Don't Like and How to Break Free. And that is what we are going to be talking about a lot today. So firstly, I just want to say, Dr. Amina, that is an incredibly impressive bio that I just read. Like, you are one impressive lady.
Well, thank you. It's nice to hear it reflected sometimes, especially when you work on your own and you're just in your head and hearing your own voices.
Yeah, I know it well. I know it well. And the first thing I want to say is that The Success Trap, your book, The Success Trap, is so insightful, and it is also incredibly well written, which I am not surprised at all that it is. And even though it's, you know, it's primarily, of course, focused on career and our work lives, it is so relevant to our love lives too. You know, I kind of mentioned before we recorded that the women that I coach, I have a program called Love for Leaders. And I, you know, as I was reading through the book, it's just so relevant to them. And what was interesting, you know, the subtitle of the book, Why Good People Stay in Jobs They Don't Like and How to Break Free. I feel like, you know, it could also be why good people stay in relationships or situationships they don't like and how to break free. Like, there's so much overlap in terms of the ideas and the topics that you cover. And I've always been obsessed with the idea of success, like in all areas of my life, love life, you know, body image, career, all of it. So I love the title. I think it is an absolutely brilliant title. But before we go any further, just for everyone else who's listening, what is the success trap?
Well, thanks for that introduction. I'm really excited to be here with you. And I love the word situationship. I think that captures the whole thing. How do we stay trapped in situationships? And the way I define the success trap is the success or the situationship you have that kind of looks successful on the outside or was successful even for you at one time. But it isn't anymore, and it's holding you back from your next version of success, your next cool situationship. So it's two things. It's not quite where you want to be, and it's also holding you back because there are good things about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm staying at my friend's in Mallorca, and we were literally having this conversation last night because my friend Amy's husband, Tristan, was in a corporate job, you know, did incredibly well, but was saying how, you know, really felt like he was on the rat race, and you never feel like you've arrived. That's what we were talking about. You never feel like you've arrived. And you know, he was saying how he realized he was doing it, you know, basically that thing of like living for the future and this like retirement one day. And so many people, like really capitalist society, feels like that's what it's about. It's like we're just constantly deferring our sense of joy and success because we are scared to take the leap. And we're going to come into that. But before we do, you know, this, I always think, well, not even think, because I've written a few books myself. And I believe that we, you know, we write the book that we needed however many years ago for like a previous version of ourselves. So, you know, we've already talked about, I've shared your bio. It's incredibly impressive, but I'm interested in your personal journey, as in how you came to write this particular book, The Success Trap.
So maybe there are two parts. So one is the bigger picture, the bigger journey of how I ended up taking a career leap from, as you said, a successful career as an academic clinician who was working on high level policy, United Nations. It was my dream when I started out when I was maybe 18. I wanted to make a big difference to populations, improve health, and work at that kind of high level, global level. And then going into, I don't know, starting again from scratch, like, let's just leave all of that and jump into something I don't know at all, business coaching. So that was one part of the what led to the book. And then the other was being in an independent professional now, working as a coach, working with people, writing every week, sharing ideas, and then wanting to put that into something that I could give my clients or that people could read. So which one do you want more detail on?
Let's go in the order that you just shared them.
Yeah. So, so I suppose I was in the success trap for a while, and I was following a path and jumping through hoops, wanting to help the world, wanting to be of service, wanting to make a difference. And it kind of worked, right? I was doing what I wanted. I was learning. I enjoyed it. I think I made a difference at least to a few people. And then realizing it's not quite, something isn't quite right. But then what do you do? Because you look around and people are like, what's wrong? You've got a great career. It's so, you've done so well. Why would you throw it all away? Yeah, and it's not just it's great. It's also, well, if you don't do that, it's, what are you going to do? It kind of triggers the fear of failure and the fear of the unknown. And so that for a couple of years, I was like a bit lost, not really knowing what was next. I never, ever thought that I would work independently. My family, my parents, not business people, not entrepreneurs. I think we have two entrepreneurs in the family, my whole like extended family. So it was not on the cards at all. So I suppose part of the book is that journey, sharing what I learned. And during those couple of years, slowly it started to come like, well, you could work independently. And the first option was consulting. So doing what I do, but as a consultant. So that was kind of acceptable to the people around me, you know. But I knew, you know, I'd always loved coaching, or rather personal development, psychology, spirituality. I did social anthropology as my option at medical school. I discovered Tony Robbins when I was pretty young. I think I bought my first personal development book at 17 after a breakup. It was something about finding your true love. You know, I wish I'd known you, Persia.
I know. Where was I back then?
And so I wanted to do psychiatry and psychology. So I was always interested in the mind, and somehow it started to come together. Like, I want to keep helping people be of service, but I want it to be more holistic, and I want it to go deeper into beliefs, mindsets, how we perceive the world. So I obviously coaching people for a few years, then I had tools I could share. I developed a particular approach around questioning beliefs. And so that all went into the book. And then there was a very practical thing around, you should write a book. I thought, I don't want to do it because I have to, but I thought, I like writing. And if it can help one or two people, why not? Yeah, and then there was a synchronicity in that I knew someone who published a book, and he introduced me to his publisher, and it was pretty easy. So it just kind of unfolded, and it just sort of happened over a few months. And so I didn't have to worry. That was one of the things. I didn't want to have to worry about formatting and designing and editing. I just enjoy the writing. So it just felt really like quite aligned. I wanted to share a secret that I didn't quite write the book that I wanted, because the publisher is a business publisher. And they said, well, you know, if you want to write spiritual things, that's not really what we do. So I had to take out the spiritual elements. So there's a possibility for a next book that will be a little bit deeper and incorporate some other principles than just business principles.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow. That's exciting. Well, I'm excited for that one already. So, there are so many good quotes in this book. And I would say, I mean, I can I can feel the spirituality in it, and that's probably why. Like some of, like you do a very clever job of getting stuff in under the radar, which I really appreciate as a photo writer. So what, like, yeah, I've written down so many different quotes, but one of my favorite is where you said the tyranny of success. I felt that so much. And that was, I think it was around about the same time or area where you were talking about, you know, the high moment of success is inevitably followed by a low one. True happiness by contrast, and a bit more, bit of a jump to the next bit. True happiness by contrast seems to be a home within. It's available to the richest and poorest alike. And then you actually did a Bible quote there, which was, I thought was so brilliant. And it made me think of, you know, in terms of our romantic lives, you know, one thing I talk about a lot is the honeymoon period, because, you know, eventually that's, or pretty soon that wears off, 3 to 6 months, generally a year if you're lucky. Mm. And I think that's the thing, is that often people then bow out at that point, or they start to just show up really, really not well, or they think there's something wrong. And I think that that can be the same with success. And it's because of the perspective and the lens that we're looking at. And I love that you approach the idea of success in a different way. And, you know, you talk about the difference between success and happiness. So could you unpack that a little bit? Like, what is the difference between success and happiness?
Wow. You're taking us in a very deep, philosophical, profound, spiritual mm-hmm. direction, which I appreciate. And thank you for reminding me of what I wrote. You know, I didn't remember writing that.
It's always interesting when people like quote bits of my book. I feel the same, as like, I just don't remember writing that at all. But just goes to show there was something obviously working with us / through us. That's what I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it really hit me. So yeah, thank you for writing those words.
Yeah, thank you for reading them. So yeah, I like etymology. So success comes from to cut off, if I remember correctly. Or is that to decide? To decide comes from cut off, to cut off. Success, I think, is similar. So generally, I would say success really is about being true to who we are, to the vision we hold, to the calling that we've come with or that's embedded in us, and letting go of what isn't. And that, I would define that as a form of happiness. But I think how I meant it in the book is that we can be happy without conventional success, like what people will define for us as success. And then that happiness is the ultimate form of success, because if you're happy, then, you know, it's game over. Why would you be chasing anything or trying to get something? You're happy. Is the mechanism that tricks us is to think that I'll be happy when, you know,
yeah.
It's like, if this happens, then I'll be happy / successful, and therefore I can be happy then. So yeah, I think in the book I meant it that way. But I think there are many profound distinctions we could go into.
Interesting is it, what you were just saying there. I don't know if I thought about it exactly in this way before, but, you know, we do live in live in a capitalist society, a consumerist society. You know, I was just this morning in an interview talking about what you just said about the when I get syndrome. When I get that, I'll be happy. When I get that, I'll be happy. We've been conditioned that quite masculine approach to, you know, achievement. You know, I've always, again, been a high achiever / overachiever. I remember I got, and what was interesting in terms of the correlation between success and happiness, when my dad was in rehab, I got the top mark in the country in English literature, which I don't think I would have got if he wasn't. I think there was a part of me that, like, you know, happiness I associated with, you know, love, peace of mind, you know, all of those sort of things. And I had gone through a really hard time with my family in my childhood and teenage years. And so, because I'd seen my dad sort of come from, I would say nothing, but like he built success on his own terms. And so I think I subconsciously went on to, like, you know, success is really important. And so I need to, that's how I'm going to get love. And so happiness and success became one and the same for me. And what I see, you know, so many women that I coach who identify as either female leaders or high achievers, you know, it's again, it, the relationship and the romantic life becomes about, I need to get the partner so that I can be seen as a success and feel a success. It's not even necessarily about happiness, because you don't, like, to be truly happy, and I think you say this in the book as well, you don't need, it's not about needing something else outside of you. It is an inside job. You know, it's a cliche, but it's true. It's an inside job. Yeah. And the message of my book, Love Is Coming, is we need to stop looking outside of ourselves for the partner we want to get, and we need to start looking inside of ourselves for the partner we want to be. Mm. And so we're not chasing, it's about contribution. And that, for me, is really a lot of what I got from your book. It's, you know, how are we showing up? How are we contributing? Obviously not, we don't want to be people pleasing and all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so powerful.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. And thanks also for sharing part of your journey from childhood. I mean, it's very touching, and I appreciate how you're modeling vulnerability as a leader. And it shows the depth of work that you've done on yourself, that you can just talk about this and help others by sharing your story. So thank you for that. And then for the, so I kind of follow the Buddhist tradition in my practice. I wouldn't say I'm a Buddhist. I don't think I'm an ist anything. But that's the tradition I've learned the most from and benefited the most from. And so this letting go of external outcomes, chasing external outcomes, is an understanding that life is imperfect, or some people say life is suffering. That's the first principle, the first noble truth, but in the Buddhist system. But I think it's, you know, in modern terms, it's that idea that happiness or peace or fulfillment will never come, not in a lasting way, from anything we gain from the outside, from anything that's in the sensory world of experience. And so that's just this very profound understanding that life's or experience is imperfect. So we'll never find that experience of peace by chasing something. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be the other way around. First of all, we find that in ourselves, and then what comes is much more alive, fulfilling, successful.
That's the irony, is that we then attract success when we're not chasing it, which reminds me of my dad. So just to fast forward, so he'd been in rehab, my mum had been in rehab, mm-hmm. and when they got healthy, I basically did the opposite, and I used, essentially, on my romantic life, it was like, on one hand, I was, you know, wanting to be the best and successful and became an actor and all that jazz. And the other hand, my love life was a complete mess, because I was trying for both. It was validation and escape, which I think addiction to success and work is, that's what it's about, I think, you know. But I really hit a low place, really low. And I ended up, just after I got, you know, talking of success, I just got my master's in classical acting. Two weeks later, found myself working at a strip club as a hostess. Had a horrific sexual assault situation, which then made me put on 2 stone in 2 months on an acting job in China, in Shanghai. And then my dad said something on the beach to me. He took me, they picked me up from the airport, and, like, you know, obviously could say, oh, goodness, she doesn't, something's not right, because I could hide everything else. Mm. And my dad said, oh, do you want to come on a holiday to like a health yoga retreat, whatever it was, in Thailand. And because I was a skin actress, I was like, yeah. And when we were there, he said something that is everything that you just said, basically encapsulated in a quote. And it went on to become the message of my first book, The Inner Fix. And it was, focus on the insides and the outsides take care of themselves. Which he probably heard in AA, because you hear all these amazing things in 12-step rooms and no one knows whoever came up with them, and it doesn't really matter. But that's it. And, you know, I feel like I spend a lifetime drilling this into my clients, but to be honest, I'm drilling it into them as much as I am myself, because yes, I might have the husband now, and, you know, on the outside, it can all look perfect, but, you know, I still have my, you know, innate response to things is, I've got to chase it. I've got to prove myself. Mm-hmm. I have to work so hard, to come back to what you shared about, it's focus on the insides and connect to that sense of peace and gratitude. You know, a big thing of this is gratitude as well. And then everything happens in the way, you know, as it happens. And not everything, you might not get everything that you desire. Mm-hmm. But you get what you need. I mean, who was it who sang that? Rolling Stones. Thank you, what they were on about the irony.
Great sages.
The wrinkly rockers.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to hear about the sexual assault. That, I mean, yeah. I just want to breathe. Mm. Yeah, it brings to mind the fact that we're embedded in a patriarchal system. And it's very powerful and very strong. We've been indoctrinated in this, and it's been here for thousands of years. And we're swimming in the water, and we can't quite see the water because we're swimming in it. But it's there. And so it'll probably always be there until, you know, the whole system changes and maybe future human beings can see things differently. But we'll always have that mechanism of lapses where we think, oh, maybe I'm not okay. Maybe I need to get the thing and then I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Because I think the way I see patriarchy, it's a system of rewards and punishments that says to receive the love, you need to do X and you need to not do Y. Mm-hmm. And so even just trusting our intuition, that can go against this system that we're conditioned with. And so just trusting ourselves can feel shameful sometimes, like, or maybe it's not okay. So it goes to that level of depth. And, you know, it's hard. And thankfully there are coaches like you and people who care and can see something different and are willing to do the work over a period of time with people to help them free themselves of the trap that can look like success.
Yeah.
But something inside says, that intuition is speaking, saying, it's not quite right for you, is it?
Mm.
But it's too scary to say, yeah, maybe it isn't. Maybe I do want something else.
Yeah. And that's as true in your work life as it, your love life as it is in your work life, or any area of life, really.
Yeah.
You know, it made me think then when you were talking about the patriarchy, that's such an interesting way of looking at that. I've never thought of that before, but yeah, completely makes sense. Mm. And I've had certain experiences in my life that I'm so grateful for, even the hard ones that I've shared with you, because it enables me, gives me a lot of passion for my work, but it enables me to see things from different perspectives. And one thing that is so relevant to this that I hadn't even thought about when I was preparing for this interview, but I once mentored a teenage girl, who was basically a billionaire's daughter. Mm-hmm. And I went over to, funny enough, I've just been in Marrakesh. I went over to Marrakesh. I think it was her 18th, possibly her 21st. I can't remember her birthday. And we went over on the private jet. We stayed at the best place. And, you know, it was, you know, I've experienced luxury. This was on another level. And what I saw is how quickly the novelty wore off. You know, the idea of going on a private jet was like, and suddenly, you know, it wears off quickly, because, you know, you can look at people who have it all and go, what on earth have you got to be unhappy about? Like I saw an interview with one of the actors from Mrs. Doubtfire the other day, the guy who played the son, the boy, and he was it was so emotional, because I mean, I love Robin Williams so much. And, you know, he would talk, you know, he'd talk, this boy talked about how, he's now a man, talked about how Robin Williams obviously on set was incredible, like he was in character. And then the boy would go into his dressing room and he was just sat there with his hands in his head, just so much pain. And I don't know if it was also Jim Carrey or someone said that, you know, I wish that everyone could get everything they want, like all the money and success, and realize it is not the solution, because you normalize to it. And I once interviewed a brilliant woman called Dr. Papadopoulos, who is the psychologist for Big Brother. I love saying her name. Mm-hmm. She talked about this idea of upper social comparison. Like we're always comparing ourselves to the success of people who we perceive as, you know, being further along, having more than we do. Mm-hmm. We don't realize there is billions of people who would look at where we are in life and think, what on earth have you got to complain about or be hurt or upset about? Mm-hmm. You live like, do you know what I mean? It's, again, it's perspective. So when you talk about this idea of success, it is a trap. You cannot win. If like billionaires can still feel like it's not enough, then it really is a trap that you are never going to win. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that experience. It was one of my early experiences, my first year as a coach, when I thought, okay, there's the person who's just like starting out in their career and they're just trying to make it. And then there's someone who's super like successful on all of it. They've got all the things that this younger person is trying to get to, and they have the same problems.
Yes.
They're complaining about the same thing. Like, I think it was imposter syndrome, and they were complaining about and how that person is doing. And it's like, this is deja vu experience. How interesting. Mm-hmm. Same issues.
Yeah. Well, that this actually might tie into one of the next questions I was going to ask you, the high achiever paradox, which I thought was a really interesting idea. So what is the high achiever paradox, and how might this negatively impact our love lives as well as our career?
So it's similar to the success trap. So it's the strengths, the things that served you. For example, I'm a hard worker, or I'm a perfectionist. It helps you in your career and in your success, especially in a patriarchal capitalist system where it's like, you know, those qualities support, you know, they're useful. And we like you to work hard for me and make sure my stuff is perfect for me. So thank you. And here's some money for the salary in exchange. And then you can buy the stuff that I'm selling for the price that I decide. And hey ho, I'm getting richer and you're kind of still. Anyway, that's a bit of a social critique rather than a response to your question. So yes, it's the qualities that help you be successful that now are in the way. Like, if I'm trying to tune into my intuition and I need to tune into being and a more receptive mode, my doer is going to get in the way. He's like, what is this about? Come on, you should be doing something. So that's the high achiever paradox, that the strengths and qualities that helped you be successful are now in the way of your next level of success or next version of success. How does that apply in relationships? Let's take the rescuer type. Let's say, and I have rescuer tendencies. I've been in a relationship where I was I was really playing out. And you know, it kept the relationship going for a while. And, you know, people can go on to get married and have children. I didn't. It worked out differently. And I'm grateful. Whereas at the time, it felt like such a disaster. And now I'm like, phew, that was a close call. So it can play out that way. So you're a rescuer. It serves the relationship. You get the relationship, you know, maybe you get benefits of some kind, financial, emotional, whatever. But you're playing a role. And so eventually you might have a wake-up call, like, why am I always the one doing everything around here? Or the partner cheats on them, like, I know you everything, and now you've gone and done this. Ah, you're awful. So you're waking up from the success of playing that rescuer role and realizing that probably a healthier relationship would not involve you having to rescue, and you can actually take turns in being the hero or the rescuer. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. So awareness is, I think what I'm getting as well is the way that we set about resolving this, at least the first instance, is becoming aware that we're playing out something that's actually quite dysfunctional, but has also got us things, you know. And that's always what's been interesting about, you know, I've been in Workaholics Anonymous. I'm not going at the moment, but it's been really interesting. So I'm like, you know what? With my parents' addiction, it was like very clear that's naughty and bad and wrong. But with being a high achiever, but to the point where, you know, breakdowns daily, like all of this stuff, like, no one else is doing this to me. This is me with the gun against my head, you know? And it's really toxic and unhealthy, but it's got me so much in the past. And so it's like redefining my relationship with that. And it's the same as what I teach with women. It's like, you know, you might have done a certain thing, like, let's use a really, you know, bit of a trite example, but it's the one that came into my head. You know, for example, I would jump into bed with someone very soon, didn't think, and it got me for a limited time. That behavior got me attention. It got me short-term gratification. but it did not get me in the long term what I desired, which really was connection and respect, that I wasn't respecting myself. So I think there's so many ways that that can apply.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is your area, so I'm not claiming that. Eliminate it more than you can.
Another thing that, I mean, there's so many things I've got here, but I really do want to touch on this. This idea, so it was actually from the blurb on the back of the book. It was an author and journalist from The Guardian, I think, Olivia Berkman. Mm-hmm. And she talked about the book, and a quote really stuck out.
Is it here? Olivia Berkman?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops. I don't know how I got Olivia.
he's a New York Times bestseller now.
Wow.
A book called, what's it called? A Thousand, it's on time. It's a more profound approach to time management.
Oh, I need to read that.
Sorry, Oliver.
Sorry, Olivia. I don't know. I'm so blind as a bat. So he said, this quote, choosing uncertainty and growth over the illusion of safety.
Oh.
And my God, I was like, that again, obviously that was in talking about our career, but again, I could see how it could link to our love life. And often when it comes to leaving a relationship, it might be in the context of leaving a relationship that you've been in a long time and you know it's that, like you were saying, that small voice is going, this isn't right, but you're scared to take the leap. Mm-hmm. But it even might be that it's not necessarily that you're leaving a relationship. You might be single, but, you know, my work is a very, very different approach to our love lives, mm-hmm. which is very in line with everything that you talk about in this book, but as applied to our love lives. So it's the idea of, yeah, doing things differently. But actually, when you think that you're safe in a job, in a relationship, it like that, it's an illusion. Because number one, especially after COVID, there is no really such thing as job security anymore.
Nope.
But also, I heard this the other day, and I can't think for the life of me where, but it was like, you know, security doesn't come from external circumstances. Security comes from within ourselves.
Yeah. We're all heading the same direction, so this is the second truth. So in the kind of Buddhist system, and also Stoicism has a similar view of reality, that it's imperfect, impermanent, and impersonal. Well, that's I've kind of put three eyes on it, because like you've got writing gifts. I've got some kind of acronym thing. So imperfect, impermanent, and impersonal. We can't, nothing's guaranteed. That's just a fact. But the system we're in pretends like, oh, if you play it in this reward punishment system the right way, if you play that game the right way, you'll get these cookies.
Yeah.
But it's made up. That's not life. Life didn't say that. Some human said that. So I think that's why, it's the same thing, whether we're seeking safety in a relationship, seeking safety in a job, like if I do the right things, if I look this way and act this way, then I'll get the cookie. And then we get there. And, you know, as most of us, well, I'm sure most of the listeners will know, it's like, well, things change. It doesn't last that long, that dopamine feeling or whatever it is.
Yeah. And sorry, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, again, coming back to our love lives, like I'll get quite a few women who'll come to me, and they come to me because they have been cheated on or broken up with or ghosted. They're like, you know, common things. Mm. And they're livid because they're like, I was so great. I was so hospitable, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, but there's no guarantees. Mm. That's life. If you want guarantees, you don't want life. I think that was from a book called Conversations with God, you know. Even when you do all of the, you know, even if you did all of the principles I teach and all the principles you teach, there are still no guarantees. But what I can, you know, the closest thing I can get to guaranteeing is you'll probably feel a whole lot better because you'll be so attached. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, like that is the best it's going to get. Like if you can be in more joy, and what I love that you talk about in your book is this idea of service.
Mm.
If you focus on that, then life feels so much more fulfilling and you feel a lot less repressed.
Yes, absolutely. And I would say definitely this, if you call it a journey of awakening to reality, like not to the fake game that we're told we need to play, rewards, punishments, cookie, or the cookie is the reward. And waking up to the fact that is not what life is. That's just conditioning that we're taught. Then I found, and I see clients, the ups and downs smooth out. Because especially for us in a Western context, like you've got a roof over your head, you've got food. Scientific evidence shows this, after a certain level of income and material comfort, you know, it doesn't get that much better, the level of happiness. So
$50,000, it's probably gone up now because it's so expensive.
I think it's, yeah. But it was around $50,000, I think, at the time, maybe right. 2 years ago. But yeah, it's so roof overhead, you know, and great philosophers talk about this, you know, good friends, good food, sort of thing. We don't need a lot to feel a sense of ease in life. And then there's the normal ups and downs that, yeah, we're going to lose things. We're going to lose loved ones. We're going to die. We're going to get sick. You know, this is what the Buddha talked, you know, this is what led to his awakening in the story. But we can cope with that. And we're not sort of every day, like up and down in some very intense high or low. We don't have to be that way. And when we wake up to reality and accept how it actually is, and that we can access a place in us that's always at peace and at ease, and then from there, things can unfold and we can co-create with life. We are life, but you know, we have the sense that there's a me. Life feels different. It does feel, there is more of a sense of flow. Absolutely. What was I going to say? Yeah, so my approach, like I've narrowed it out to 3 P's, which are not in the book, this is a later development, is presence, power, possibility. So presence, being here in this moment, in the reality of this moment, not better, not worse, just as it is. There's already peace that comes just from that. If I'm here and breathing, that's already a win. Power, starting to question, what am I chasing exactly and why? Where did that come from? How am I abdicating my power to make true choices based on reality in order to get some cookie that I'm promised? Like, I'll get this amazing guy or I'll get this amazing job and then it'll be fantastic. How am I tricking myself? So that's... you know, the nature of the work we do as coaches, getting out of the comfort zone because we're questioning things that felt safe. Ask, you know, working on the beliefs and the assumptions that are embedded that we're blind to for a while. And then possibility is like, oh, then we start to see things a bit differently. And it can be a bit scary, fear of the unknown, fear of failure, all of that. But we take our first step and we wobble a bit, and hopefully our coach and our friends and our community, they hold us, and then a whole new trajectory emerges across the board.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. 3 P's. I'm going to remember that one. That's brilliant. And you actually said something earlier that links really nicely to the next question. So you have a chapter called Goal-Driven versus creative flow. Mm. And I love this idea. Could you just unpack what this means? Mm-hmm. This goal-driven. Yeah.
And it's available, the chapter is available free for anybody who wants to have a look.
Oh, brilliant. Okay,
yeah, on my website. If, I think you said you'd give the link. So if they go there, they'll see there's on the homepage, there's a section where they can access the chapter. But as a summary, it's very much this idea. So goal-driven, reward-based. So our brain, there is a part of it, an early in our evolution, part of the brain that's based on rewards. So we get dopamine, like it tags experiences and memories by saying, oh, these berries, good. So dopamine, when you see them and get them, or the idea of getting them gives you dopamine. So you're like, I want the berries. Poisonous berries, they don't get that. So The goal-driven system is that it's the cookie reward-based thing.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we've been talking about it up until now. It's not going to lead to happiness and fulfillment. Mm-hmm. At best, it leads to a high.
Short-lived high. Yeah.
Creative flow is more, what am I here to create? I become a creator, not a striver or an achiever who's trying to get the cookie. I become a force of creation that's part of the universal creative symphony. And by tuning into my intuition, I get an intuition. I get a vision. I get an idea. And then I have to somehow put energy and intention into it to bring it out, give birth to it. And I'll meet obstacles and so on and so forth. But it's a different way of living. And it's more moment to moment. And it's more intuitive than linear. You know, in a goal-driven thing, you're like, that's the goal. What's the strategy? What are the steps? Now get on with it. Implement. Do, 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 do. Creative cycle, it's more, you know, think of an artist. Like you wake up. There's an artist called Agnes Martin, I think. She's quite famous. She's US. I think she's deceased now. But there's a short clip of her somewhere on YouTube where her method, she wakes up, she sits in a chair, and she just sits in a meditative state. And then an idea comes. And then she gets up. And then she starts to draw this idea. And she had a method where she draws it at small scale and then she blows it up and she creates these big canvases that are interesting and abstract. And there was one at the Tate, I think, a while back. And that's the creative mode where I'm receiving an idea through my imagination. And then I take it forward into the world. And I might not know the whole thing. It's one step at a time. It's a very, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this, and part of, you know, I think a balance is good because you need both. Once you've got the creative idea and the next step, you do need the, like, okay, I have a step, so I'm going to take action and I'm going to do it this way. And it's a bit rational. But I think most of us, or at least in my experience, we need to rebalance. So moving from the goal-driven to the creative flow. And I do have the 6 R's. If someone wants a specific map for the creative cycle, which
I'll go on then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6 steps. It's the coaching methodology that I kind of, if ever anybody asks me for a methodology, presence, power, possibilities, the principles, and then these 6 R's. Relax, because most of us are just going too fast to go to nowhere, to get some cookie over there. Relax, reflect, release. And that's the power, like questioning and releasing what no longer serves us. And then from there, we're in possibility, which is reconnect with intuition, a sense of true conscious choice, vision, values, respond. That's the 5th R. And then the final one is receive. Because we've got to also know it's not all on us. We have to trust. We have to be patient.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's in the chapters. So if anybody wants to read more about that, they can access that.
Yes, I highly recommend you do. And that you've led really nicely onto my next question again. Receive. Be patient. We live in an Amazon Prime culture. That's what I call it. I want it and I want it yesterday. And it's just go, 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 go. And it's addictive. We are all, you know, we're all addicted to technology. It's quite scary. And you talk about this idea of the toxicity of constant urgency. Mm. And what was really interesting is you then have a chapter on slow down to speed up. Mm. And I have a principle that I teach that is called the slower you go, the faster love grows. You know, so much of the time, and I was this person myself, but I see particularly high achieving women in this pressure, you know, partly because of biological clock, partly because of this constant state of urgency and technology that because of that. And they're just rushing through these romantic milestones, because they're trying to get the cookie, and the cookie keeps on changing, because one minute it's getting, I want a boyfriend, I want a ring, I want to be engaged, I want to move in together with a mortgage, I want the wedding, I want the, like, it. And then what I often see is women, a different type of woman who comes to me, where they've kind of done, they've ticked off the checklist mm-hmm. in the relationship, they've got all the stuff, they've got it, they've gone through, and then they're like, shit, there's nowhere higher to go. Mm. And they might go, right, bigger house, but they become really quite depressed. Mm. And it's and that's their breakthrough of realizing, and a little bit like the same again with the job. Mm. I've climbed either as high as I can, or I've realized that this, I'm not fulfilled. Mm. And so I need to look at this in a different way, because it is an illusion to think like I used to. Oh, the problem is this guy, that I'll be happy when I'm with that guy over there, or in a different relationship, or we live in a different country, or whatever it is. It will never end. We've talked about this already. Mm. But the slow down to speed up, mm. can you just share a little bit of why this is so, so key as a principle?
Yeah. Well, I think you explained it beautifully, so I'm not sure I can add more. And I just want to say, I was that person. So in my 20s, late 20s, early 30s, you know, it was a thing. You're like, okay, time to get married now. let's get dating. I was an early adopter. I was the first like to do online speed dating. You know, it was a long time ago. Online dating. I got my friends on it. My friends found people and got married. And so I met someone offline. And I was like, okay, man, you know, I want to get married. And he was like, okay. But it didn't work out. And in a way, thankfully, it didn't work out, because I don't think we were quite compatible. And I'm not sure in the end whether that was really my path. Because what I sort of gained or realized on this different path, where I let go of the model that I had in my head, I've received so much from following this path. I can't imagine not having that, you know, in exchange for the fantasy I had. So although it was really painful, and I'm still working on some of these questions, like, do I want to get a relationship? You know, what, you know, I'm still working on these questions, letting go of it and allowing a slower and maybe a trusting that there's nowhere to get to. It's all yes. here.
Wow. What if that is such a powerful question. What if there was nowhere to get to? How would that change how you were showing up in your love life, in your work life, in yourself, in everything?
Yeah. So that's the slow, that's when, you know, you said earlier, then things, the things that are meant to come your way will just float in. And isn't that a much more pleasant way to have it come about? And if it doesn't come about, you'll have a much more pleasant life anyway.
Yeah.
And you'll avoid also difficult things that would come from the speed, from just ticking the boxes. And
yeah. Which leads on really nicely to, well, it's kind of my final question. I've got like a little like lightning round at the very end. But so you have the chapter towards the end, work cultures that liberate, and then the subchapter, living from a sense of freedom together. And of course, me being a love coach, I was straight away thinking, putting everything and linking it to love and relationships.
Yeah.
But living from a sense of freedom together is definitely what I have with my husband, Joe. And it's been very intentionally created like that, because both of us value freedom so much. Mm. And you know, we thought we were going to be spending a month, as I said, in Morocco. Mm. Plans changed. He's now back in the UK. I'm at my friend's in Mallorca. Mm. He will hopefully be coming at some point, but I don't know. But we have this sense of trust within our relationship that we cultivated from actually before we even got into the relationship, because it was trust within ourselves and in, you know, valuing freedom.
Mm.
And so what do you mean by that in terms of work?
Cultures that live, by the way, if I had a relationship, I want the relationship you've just described. And it's just wonderful to hear that, you know, we need positive role models. We need people who are leading the way and creating the healthier version of the world, whether it's relationships, work, and so on. So I just want to appreciate you for that. And I hope, you know, to learn more from you. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the work cultures that liberate, was that... What was the question? Can you remind me, please?
Yeah, it was just understood, like, what is a work culture that liberates? Mm. What does that mean?
A work culture that liberates. I think it was a bit of an inspired mode, so I'm not... But what I would say is culture is made up. We make it up by the stories we tell each other, by the agreements we make with each other, by the system of rewards and punishments we create. Although I hope there's a future where we don't rely on rewards and punishments, we rely on conscious agreements based on vision, on a shared vision that we have. So a culture that liberates would be one, I would say, that allows the freedom of choice that's based on conscious choice, where people are treated as adults, not as animals that you condition with rewards and punishments, but where you can reason together, you can feel together, and you can co-create a vision. We might not all have the same vision, but I'm sure all humans would say it'd be great to have a planet where we can live, at least. So a culture that liberates, I would say, is that, just like in a couple, you get to make your own choices and hopefully based on a shared vision. For me, I think of couples as a triangle. So there's the shared purpose, and then there's our individual purposes that we honor. And then having that milieu where I can choose consciously from my intuition, not out of fear or desire for the cookie.
I love it. Cookie talk. It's making me really want a cookie. It's working. But I love
it. As long as it's the conscious choice.
But what you said there about the triangle,
yeah,
makes me think of Carl Hildebrand, who I love, who wrote The Prophet. And he says of marriage, but it works for relationships too, it's like, be like the pillars of the temple, not too far apart, not too close together. Like, you're holding up the structure that is the relationship, but you're two individuals. And I just was, I mean, I get shivers every time I say that, probably in like 96% of podcasts I do, whether I'm interviewed or on this podcast. But it's such a good reminder, because we, like, there's so much codependency in the world because of all these really fucked up, like you said, these like rules that are made by, like, they're not real. They're you know, they're not life. Nature's not doing all that. Like nature's not doing all these conditions. Like, I will only love you or give you this if you do this. It's like, that's just not how the world works. It's how humans have worked. And actually, when you become aware of it, like this, which is, I really hope that this episode is doing for the listeners, certainly doing for me, is just remembering that we do get to choose. And become aware. And now, like, you will start to see it everywhere, of like these conditions that we place upon ourselves, upon other people, and all, they're essentially barriers to our happiness. So you can choose differently.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So I could literally go on forever, but we've come to what I call the home straight questions, the lightning round. So before, yeah, we've got four of them. So I'm going to just start with the first one and just don't overthink it. Just say whatever comes to head, because that's, it comes to your mind, because that's always the most interesting. It could be quite random.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one is, what love life advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Relax.
I love that. Nothing else needs to be said. Relax. Yeah, I'd actually give that to my 37-year-old self right now.
Me too.
And actually, on that note, Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, she said, like, my only goal now is to be relaxed, because when do you ever see a relaxed woman? I was like,
that is profound.
It is. Yeah. She's not brilliant. Okay, next question. What is one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
I can belly dance.
Again, topical, because I've just been in Marrakesh watching lots of belly dancers. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so where can, this is not a fast one, this is just before the last question, where can people find out more about your work?
They can connect with me on LinkedIn, they can email me, the details are on the website, so I guess the website drhermina.com is the easiest. And I love talking with people and connecting, so don't hesitate.
Reach out. We will link that in the show notes. And you can also go and get that amazing chapter for free on Dr. Amina's website. So we'll link that for you. Okay. And I just want to say, you know, if you are listening, I know this has been a longer episode because I just had so many questions and I had to ask them all because it's just too good. If you identify as a high achiever, you must get this book. It will serve you your career. But now you've been thinking about, you know, how it impacts your love life. I think in the way it did for me, you will see how this plays out in so many different areas of your life. Okay, so final question. Mm-hmm. What is your number one piece of advice for any women listening to this who may have fallen into the success trap in their love lives or really in any area of their life?
I would say don't be afraid.
Why not? I'm not ready to end. Tell me a bit more. Why don't be afraid?
Because your fear is likely out of proportion with what's true for you and the reality that's possible for you.
Yeah. One day at a time.
One day at a time.
Back to what you were saying, being present and relaxing.
Yeah, they're linked. So that sense of okayness, I think. And then taking it one step at a time. Can I plug my newsletter, Wise Wednesdays?
Oh, of course you can. Plug away.
Because that's how people get to know me if they don't know me and they want to get to know me. I write a weekly newsletter called Wise Wednesdays where I share a few thoughts, ideas, similar to what we've been talking about today. And so you can sort of nibble away at how I work and how I think and see if you like it.
Yeah, so that can they do that on your website as well?
They can indeed. So
fantastic. So I can, you know, you'll see from the book that you are such a brilliant writer. Go and sign up, get the book, get that chapter, and that's going to then lead you to get the book and also sign up for Wise Wednesdays. I know I will be. So listen, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and your wisdom. It's been amazing chatting.
Thank you, Persia. Thank you for being here and for the invitation. I really, really enjoy this.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am @PersiaLawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at PersiaLawson.com. This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.